from St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
Between the state's budget, spending federal dollars from the American Rescue Plan Act, and redistricting, Missouri legislators will have more on their plates than usual when the 2022 general legislative session begins. On this week's episode of Politically Speaking, we talk with Missouri House Representative Michael O'Donnell about the upcoming session, including those must-accomplish tasks the legislature faces this year. We also talk about a bipartisan town hall meeting on crime in South St. Louis County that he participated in. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
We have to talk about things that matter to people.
I've tried to bring that same aggressive, iconoclast style with me to the United States Senate.
I think my district is a model for the state.
We put Missourians first.
You just kind of have to find the common ground with people.
I believe that this district deserves someone who represents their values.
After I came back to St. Louis, I started thinking that I could have a bigger role on the change that I wanted to make.
Hello and welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, State House and Politics reporter Sarah Kellogg. Joining me is my co-host. He's the political correspondent for St. Louis Public Radio,
Jason Rosenbaum.
We're back in our respective cities this week. I'm back talking via Zoom. You're in St. Louis. I'm in Jefferson City.
I guess the universe has realigned itself.
So joining us in the studio at St. Louis Public Radio, he is the state representative for the 95th District, which covers part of St. Louis County.
Michael O'Donnell.
So welcome to the show. Since we're apparently continuing our streak of having first-time guests on the show, we'd love for you to tell our listeners about you. You know, why did you get into politics, and talk about your district a little bit?
Sure. So a little bit about my background. My background's in investing, and I'm a municipal bond trader for an investment firm headquartered here in St. Louis. I've been doing that for 30 years. It's kind of fun because you think of it from the investment side and things like that. But the added value, is that it's in the municipal finance area. So it's something that we deal with in the legislature, whether it's state finances, school districts, fire districts, turnpike authorities, whatever. I get to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah, this is a really, really nerdy observation. But do you realize the irony that you're a municipal bond trader and most of your district is unincorporated?
It is kind of ironic. You're right.
It's mainly like the Oakville area.
Correct.
Which you represent.
Correct. Which most people think is its own municipality or its own town,
but it
doesn't exist.
Oh, it is not. If you were around during the Oakville Senior Living Facility fiasco, I was, you found out very quickly Oakville is not a municipality.
Correct.
But continue, Representative. Yeah.
So that's what I've been doing for 30 years. That being in that industry actually led me to, you had talked about my bio earlier, led me to actually being in the military. I kind of have a backwards way of getting there. But my firm had me in New York on 9/11. My plans for that day were to be out in New England, or I'm sorry, to be out on Long Island visiting one of our branches. And then my plans for the afternoon were to head downtown to the World Trade Center to see a guy that I had traded with for about 8 years, gotten to be good friends with, Carl Smith, at a firm called Cantor Fitzgerald. He was on the 104th floor of Tower 1. And needless to say, Carl didn't come home that day, and I came home from that feeling like I should be doing something, and ended up enlisting in the United States Navy with the hope of doing ground intelligence, working with ground forces in Iraq and Afghanistan, and actually ended up getting to do that, spend some time there. Other aspects of my bio, wife and two children. I have a son that's a junior in college and a daughter that's in between undergrad and grad school. She's taking a year off just to kind of save some money. My wife and I have been married for 25 years and lived in the Oakville area that entire time.
So you decided to run in 2018 after Marsha Haefner termed out. And we've had her on the show a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she's explained that this district used to be a Democratic, slightly Democratic-leaning district. Then it kind of turned into a swing district. And now I think it's a firmly Republican district.
Like
Oakville is the one part of South County that has gone just crazily Republican in the last 10 years.
And what I usually tell people is and she's exactly right, that it did make that shift. When, you know, people say, oh, you're in St. Louis County, you must have a really tough time, you know, with getting elected, getting reelected. And I tell them, don't look at the boundaries, but look at the area. I would suggest that politically, Oakville has gotten to be more like Jefferson County and less like St. Louis County. I would say that's probably the better way of looking at it.
So you're about to start your fourth session as a legislator in the 2022 session. What are some kind of general reflections you've had coming into this and being a lawmaker?
I would say, and I would tell people who are looking from the outside, one of the concerns I had was you look at the world that we're in and really the toxicity of the political environment. And I was concerned it was going to be just like that in the legislature, that there was going to be this constant political bickering and really kind of pettiness and nastiness that we see that seems to get a lot of attention in the public realm. And it's just not there. I mean, there's 163 of us, you know, most of the time. Usually we've got a few vacancies. But there's this great interaction. There are plenty of Democrats that I have great conversations with, you know, guys like Steve Butts or Don and Behringer or, you know, some of the other St. Louis or even Kansas City side reps. And it's not political. It's not nasty. It's not toxic. These people are no different than me in that they're just there to represent their community, to do what's right for their community, and really kind of help Missourians. So that to me was a nice relief that really made the environment more enjoyable and the whole experience more enjoyable.
Speaking of session, you know, this was a very deliberate question on my part, so we can get into our first topic, which is the upcoming 2022 legislative session. So what are your overall impressions on how you think this session is going to go?
Oh, man. It's tough, and it seems like there are so many potentials for conflict. And it just, you know, you pick any of them. You know, you look at the way veto session ended in the Senate. It felt like it got a little personal. And that, to me, I'm concerned that carries over. I hope that those folks can come together and put the past behind them and move forward for Missourians. But it's tough to say. And then you put some real challenging things. And it's not that this session's going to be, you know, any different or any more special than other sessions. But, you know, typically we're always proud to say we have one constitutional responsibility, and that's passing the budget. This time we have two. And the two things that we have to do, and that's the budget, as always, but we also have to do redistricting. And I think that is going to – the fact that – Jason's laughing. But the fact that that's forced at the front end of session, I think is going to really create a crazy dynamic. Because if you think about how session's been – and granted, I've only been there 3 years – it builds to a crescendo, right?
Do you think it was a mistake for the governor not to call a special session on redistricting?
I'm not sure what the method to the madness behind the governor's decision to do that. I'm kind of interested to see how it's going to pan out, because like I said, I feel like we always build to this crescendo at the very end, but man, we're going to have to hit the ground running, and there's going to be some you know, there's going to be some political battles that go on that are pretty significant and pretty meaningful to people. So in just that one battle in redistricting, so to put that up at the front end is definitely going to set the tenor for the rest of the session.
There are a lot of these kind of must accomplish tasks. You know, it is, you know, redistricting, but also allocating funds from the American Rescue Plan Act. You know, not only do you have a budget, you have billions of dollars that you need to allocate. And there's also, you know, people running for office. You know, what do you believe is the best way to tackle these hurdles that have to be accomplished?
Right. Yeah. The way I've described it to people is you take a monopoly board where people have been playing for several rounds and you've got all this money and all these pieces and houses and hotels on it, and you just throw it up in the air because but not only do all those pieces move, but now all of the locations on the board have just gone up in the air as well. The board is completely blank because now you're redistricting, right? You're going to have cases where you know, because the number of city reps is probably going to have to decline, you may see a couple of St. Louis city reps that are going to have to run against each other in a primary, which is, you know, which is unfortunate. You know, you could have somebody like Representative Murphy and I ending up in being drawn into the same district or something like that.
Yeah, and just I want to make sure our listeners understand this, and I'm sure that they do because I hammer this point home probably obsessively. Congressional redistricting is done by the state legislature, so people like Representative O'Donnell will vote on a congressional map. State legislative redistricting will either be done by commissions or, as I have, you know, guessed, probably appellate judges. But still, what he's saying about the state legislative impact of this is still valid. But I wanted to just interject there.
Right. Yeah. And so I feel like we're going to have to press on. You know, we're going to have to push through. The fact that this serious conflict is going to come up in the beginning, I think will set the mood, but I don't think it changes anything. I feel like you're going to have this it'll be more of a two-ring circus. You're going to see the redistricting thing going on its path. Meanwhile, we're going to be headed down the normal path. You're going to see budget, you know, the budget being presented. You're going to see initial bills making their way down the path. I don't think that stuff gets messed up too much. It's just a matter of the dynamic. You know, once we've redrawn these eight congressional districts, what have we done? Who is now angered and won't come to the table to talk? You know, that kind of stuff. We'll see what happens.
I'm only going to ask one redistricting question because, as everyone knows who listens to the show, I could get
that might be a record.
I could get really obsessed with this topic.
You don't have to do this just for me.
Yeah. But, you know, we have other stuff we have to talk about. What do you think the main conflict for congressional redistricting is going to be? Like, some people think it's going to be, you know, will Republicans go after Emanuel Cleaver and turn Mo 5 into a Republican district? I don't think that you all are going to do that, but you may surprise me. I think their biggest conflict is going to be between Republicans about how to change the second district, which you're in,
correct,
I would assume,
correct,
about whether to put more of St. Charles or Jefferson County in there, because it's going to have to change because Cori Bush's first district is going to have to take in about 40,000 people, all of which will be in the second district. So you're going to have to make up for those people.
Correct.
Am I right? Am I right about that being probably the biggest conflict in redistricting, or do you suspect other things will be too?
I think you're on the right track. You know, the fun topic always, right, is 7-1, 6-2. What's the plan? My concern is, you know, I'm a 6-2 fan. My concern is, do Republicans now look at Virginia and the tightness of the New Jersey governor's race and say, hey, this is in our favor. We can win 7-1. I've managed risk all my life, and it makes me nervous to get greedy. I think what I would prefer to see is you make Ann Wagner's district less in play. You know, we've spent a lot of money in that seat to retain that seat over the years, and, you know, make that seat a little easier for her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, since Republicans get to decide, maybe you make Emanuel Cleaver's district a little more difficult, but don't get greedy and try to draw it in a way that it suddenly becomes super competitive or plus one R, because by doing that, there's only so many, you know, Republican votes out there. You spread them too thin, you get a year where Republicans are sitting where Democrats are today, and you've got a 5-3 map instead of a 7-1 map.
Yeah, and before I turn it back to Sarah, yes, regardless of whether you put Jeffco or St. Charles in, Wagner's second district, which takes in parts of St. Louis County, St. Charles and Jeffco, is going to get more Republican. Mm-hmm. I mean, after she beat Jill Shoup by 6 when Biden and Trump tied there, I mean, I think she's going to come in with that race with an edge no matter what.
Correct.
But, you know, it'll still be reasonably – I don't see it being more than plus 9 or plus 10. And in that way, it could conceivably flip in some ways. Sarah, back to you.
So, you know, talking about redistricting, talking about the budget, you know, these are must-accomplish tasks. Do you think there's going to be a lot of time – you know, you mentioned the Monopoly Board. Is that going to monopolize a lot of the time that could be spent on other issues?
No, and I would say that with confidence because I've been part of multiple aspects of that process, and they're all moving at the same time. It may not, we may not look that bright from the outside, but we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We, you know, the budget moves along its track. Bills move along their separate tracks. You know, yes, things get dicey at the end, and I sort of figured out why a lot of that happens. You know, we talk about how we really start going through bills quickly, or we start loading up bills at the end. And I started looking through bills and the actions on bills that actually end up passing. And, you know, I think people from the outside look at it and say, well, just pass the bill out of the House, pass the bill out of the Senate, and send it over to the governor. But if you actually looked at the detail of how that bill made it through the process, you know, every time I thought the bill that I passed last session was done and we were ready to finally pass it, it met another hurdle. It had to go through another process. It had to go back to a committee, or it had to go to another committee, or it got, you know, it had to go to conference committee. It just, the process takes so long, and I feel like that's not going to change. That, like I said, the only thing that concerns me, and this I'll also attribute to my experience in the bill that I got passed this last session, where there's bills that are challenging, there are discussions and the people that, you know, and negotiations, and you bring the stakeholders together. You know, the bill I had was a utilities financing bill, and it brought together, you know, it brought in the utilities, it brought in the Public Service Commission, who decides, you know, what you as a utility ratepayer, what you're actually going to pay. It brought in the industrials. We had, you know, the finance side of things. You had all of these people at the table. You know, that one senator would express a concern, and they would work out the details of that solution, or how to arrive at a solution. And I feel like all of those things happen away from away from the conflicts that you might see during the session. My only concern is that some of those negotiations don't happen because personalities won't let them. That's the only area that I would have some concerns going forward.
Are there kind of any particular bills, topics, issues that you expect to see this upcoming session? And then are any of these kind of ghosts from sessions past, like maybe issues that made it across one chamber but not the other, or bills that were kind of close but just ran out of time?
Let's see. I think one that you, and this won't surprise anyone, you know, the bills that the House got out of elections on voter ID and IP reform, no surprise that I would expect that those will be back. You know, I've learned quickly that it's not too difficult with a supermajority to pass things out of the House. And a lot of people don't understand when they look at the House, they say, oh, you guys passed it without any problems. Why isn't it law? Well, the Senate is difficult.
Yeah, they call the Senate the Temple of Doom for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. And it's because individual senators over there have power. You know, I mean, if the Senate didn't work like it does, the negotiation example I just gave you wouldn't have mattered, right? Because that senator would have just gotten rolled over. But, you know, she was part of the discussion because she had the power to essentially stand and filibuster the bill. But that, you know, was the impetus for negotiations. And so I feel like that could be the Democrats' hill to die on. You know, the IP reform, if you think about so many of the things that, you know, the big scale things that Democrats haven't been able to do in the state, they've come through initiative petition, right? You've had, you know, Clean Missouri came through that. You had Medicaid expansion came through that. Neither of those would have made it through the House or the Senate with the supermajorities we have. And so that one, I think, is going to be difficult. I think there'll be no problems getting it through the House, but it making it through the Senate is going to be a really tough challenge.
One of my favorite surprises of the last few days of session last year is when the Senate proposed this idea of doing runoffs for statewide and congressional races. Do you think that's a good idea? Or do you think this is the, quote, we're scared of Eric Greitens will win a GOP primary for Senate bill and we're trying to stop him?
That's funny. And I know I've heard a lot of the the commentary around that. It's certainly an interesting idea, and I get why you would want to do it. I mean, we're seeing that something like that in the city, right? And they changed their preferential ranking. There was even discussion I heard of doing that in St. Louis County as well. So I get why you do that, right? You could have a primary that you could have five candidates that are really competitive, and one of them win with 23% or something like that, and that essentially becomes your statewide candidate. I get the strategy.
I got the sense that there's some of your Republican House colleagues hated that idea, which is why it never got traction even after the Senate passed. Is that true?
I'm not sure what I hadn't really heard a whole lot other than in media reports that discussions of that. I really didn't really seem to be one of those things that worked its way around caucus.
I think the problem with bringing it back next year is if you spring this new system onto voters and then they have to vote 2 months later, that's really confusing for voters.
Right.
So it seems like this idea is dead in the water.
Right. First, it looks like we're building a system because of the current situation.
Yeah.
Right. And you mentioned that, but also you're creating an additional expense. I mean, a statewide election is not a cheap thing. So I think there's some reluctance to do that as well. I almost look at it and say we're trying to create a solution in search of a problem.
So, you mentioned the supermajority, but you also talked about kind of working with Democrats and kind of seeing eye to eye. What are some opportunities for bipartisanship this year that you think would be possible?
I think there's a lot more bipartisanship going on than is evident. Now, granted, on some of the big issues, you may feel like that's not happening. But that's kind of the nature of partisan politics, right? I mean, on these big issues, it's clear where Republicans and Democrats are. But on a lot of other issues that are actually pretty relevant, they may not necessarily get the media attention that some of these other issues get. And I'll be proud to boast that the bill that I passed last year had one no vote in the House, and that no was a Republican. So. And I think if you go back and look at a lot of the bills that actually do end up passing and you look at the voting, there's a lot of Democrats. And a lot of times there's 150 plus yes votes, which obviously is going to include both Republicans and Democrats. It's just some of the bigger issues where there's a clear divide. And I think that's kind of the nature of the business, right? I mean, Republicans have the things they believe, Democrats have the things they believe, and they're going to go fight for that position because that's what their constituents wanted them to do.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. And we're back on Politically Speaking. I'm Sarah Kellogg. Joining me is my co-host, St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum. And our guest this week is Representative Mike O'Donnell, who represents the 95th District, which covers part of St. Louis County. And he is joining Jason in the studio. So, Representative, our next series of questions is on a town hall meeting you attended. And, Jason, this is more, your topic.
Yeah.
So go ahead and start asking questions.
So I was scrolling through the Twitterverse, I think, over the weekend, and I saw that you, Representative Murphy, his son, Jamie Murphy, who works for Senator Whelan, who I've known for a long time, and St. Louis Prosecutor Wesley Bell were holding a pretty well-attended town hall meeting in South St. Louis County about car break-ins. How did this come about, and what was basically the point of this meeting?
So I would say it started just if you watch your local social media feed and you see what's going on, a lot of what was being talked about was some of the crime that people are capturing on their Ring doorbells, just to give an example. And the one that really caught a lot of news media attention was the group walking into someone's garage past their outdoor camera and someone pulling out a rifle. And that really got a lot of attention and got a lot of buzz. And Jim Murphy reached out to me and said, hey, you think maybe we could do a town hall meeting and get the St. Louis, the South County precinct captain and just let people kind of hear what they're doing about this sort of thing. And I said, that sounds great, Murph. Let's do it. Let's go for it. And so he had arranged that. And I think he ended up running into Wesley Bell at some event. And he mentioned, you know, we're having another one of these town hall meetings. And we had done one with Wesley Bell early on in our first term. And he came out just to talk to South residents and Murphy's in my district. And so Jim invited him back, and he came out. And I think that was a great thing for him to do, just because this is just as much his space as it is the police, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the police can arrest people, but that's not the end of the process. You have to have a prosecutor that's actually taking that police report and, you know, building a case and convicting or getting some kind of conviction out of it. And you know, and he's doing that. And the police and Prosecutor Bell sounded like, you know, as they were talking at the town hall, they were very much on the same page. They're very much focused on curbing this crime. Because it's really, and, you know, the South County Precinct Captain Schneider really stressed that this was, in fact, a surge. It wasn't just a social media hype that yeah. brought a lot of attention to a few incidences. They were, in fact, seeing a surge in South County. And so, you know, the St. Louis County, not just that precinct, but the St. Louis County Police Force as a whole brought in extra resources to try to combat this.
Did you feel that Prosecutor Bell and the officials from the St. Louis County Police Department had like an actual plan to deal with this? Or do you think that they were just there to show up and to make an appearance rather than actually have a plan?
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. 100% feel like they had a plan. And I feel that our constituents that were at that town hall had a feeling that they had a plan. And like I said, that they brought in the extra resources, both the police and the prosecutor bringing in the extra resources to deal with this situation. The police brought in a vehicle crime unit that you know, looks at and processes these crimes. And then just the deliberate things that Prosecutor Bell's office was doing to prosecute these and expedite these cases.
Yeah, and I think the reason it caught my attention when Sarah was talking about the bipartisan angle, we've actually had Representative Murphy on the show, and I think he said he likes Wesley Bell personally, but I think that he actually like proposed legislation in the past critical of a lot of his policies. So the fact that, you know, conservative Republicans and a Democratic prosecutor who's run on a reform platform can meet an audience of people that probably didn't vote for him in 2018 or probably not going to vote for him in 2022, and everybody leaves that meeting pretty satisfied. It's almost like this is kind of what you hope like politicians should do on a baseline, but it doesn't seem to happen very often. So it has to be like, wow, this is like a cool moment. In some ways, it's kind of sad that I'm saying that, but
it's the reality.
But it's the reality.
But you're exactly right. I feel like this is how it is supposed to work. This is, you know, it's not, you know, he didn't come in with the big D on his chest and I didn't come in with a big R on my chest. He came in as the prosecuting attorney. Police officers came in as police officers. Murphy and I came in as state officials, and there was a problem in our community. I feel like once you get past acknowledging that there's a problem, everybody does their job. And I think that may have been the initial concern with Wesley Bell. You know, I think one of the things, and I remember when Murphy was proposing his legislation that first go around, that was the point at which Wesley Bell had said something about not prosecuting deadbeat dads. And I think that got a lot of people's, you know, hackles up and concern. And I think that was the evolution of Murphy's concerns. But I think the prosecutor has laid some of those aside. He's prosecuting crime, and that's what needs to happen. You need to know if you're going to commit a crime in St. Louis County that the police are going to arrest you and that the prosecutor is going to prosecute you. If one of those two is missing, then we're going to have a crime problem in St. Louis County.
What do you think the legislature can do to support agencies like the St. Louis County Police Department? You know, there were several bills in the 2021 session that sought to do that from different perspectives. But, you know, is there anything else that can be done? And if so, what?
You know, and that when Murphy brought up this idea of the town hall, I kind of had in my head, what can we do? What can I do as a legislator to change this? And my initial thought was, I could create more laws, but I feel like, you know, what I saw on video was already illegal.
Right.
You know, I mean, I get concerned when we start to try to create more laws to overlay the laws that we already have. You know, we could maybe do something to help with this may take us down a rabbit hole, but there's been a lot of concerns expressed about St. Louis County's Prop P, the sales tax.
Oh, yeah.
That the sales tax that was done, and really the way it was on the ballot, was public safety. But the way the commercials read were, you know, you're gonna pay police more. We're gonna have two police in every car, and all of this stuff. And I think one of the takeaways from the town hall was the light went on for a lot of people that what you see on the commercial and what's actually in the bill that you're voting for are two very different things. I would be amenable to looking at something that might help St. Louis County get more of that money to the police, as opposed to getting funneled off to some of these. And I'm not sure how much we can do there.
Yeah.
You know, but that would be something I would be very supportive of. I would like to see more of that money going to police. I look at, and you know, let me put on my naval intelligence officer hat for a second. You know, the police talked about how many officers they have on any patrol, on a patrol or on, you know, doing patrols during this high crime hour or these high crime hours that we were having mm-hmm. in South County. And the first thing I look at as an intelligence officer is that police officer can only see what's around him. If you put a house in front of him, he can't see through it or around it or over it. But, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan, we used UAVs all the time, and we're seeing the use of UAVs, all unmanned aerial vehicles.
So those are basically like drones.
Like drones.
Yeah.
And just with cameras on them to see, you know, especially at night, you can see that things are calm. There's not a lot of movement. So when you suddenly see a group of people walking down a subdivision street at 2:30 in the morning, that's something worth investigating. But unless that police officer drives past that group that's committing those – or that's creating themselves an opportunity to commit a crime – You're never gonna get those people.
So you've hit on one of my favorite topics, which is Proposition P, which was a half-cent sales tax that was passed, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. Raises about $60 to $80 million. You're right. It was definitely messaged as we are going to provide more money for police. And it did provide more money for police, unquestionably. Maybe not as much as people wanted. Right. But you look at crime statistics, even though people like Steve Stenger, who's easy to dunk on for various reasons, said this was going to be transformational and how it was going to be a revolutionary way to deal with crime. Crime hasn't gone down in St. Louis County. So does this kind of run counter to the idea that just throwing more money toward a police agency is a way to fight crime? I understand maybe you may not want to decrease money, but this seems to be a telltale example of like increasing a police budget does not automatically lead to a safer St. Louis County. I'd be interested in your take on that.
Well, I think, and I'll put this out there. It sounds contrary to what you might associate with my party label, but I was opposed to Prop P, and primarily because of the way it was worded. Do I want to see more funding for police? I absolutely do. But I felt like this had a lot of opportunity for misuse, misdirection of funds. You know, I think tightening it up. I think it matters, though. I think I feel like there's an opportunity for doing more. You know, granted, what did we pass this? Three or four years ago?
Yeah.
And there wasn't a – that's not a whole lot of time. I mean, we could expect that changes that have needed to be made or changes – that are still in the works, maybe haven't necessarily taken effect. Technology can be slow to acquire and so forth. So I'm not as convinced that more money for the police is a bad thing. I would just suggest, and this goes with anything, I think people were, to some degree, sold a bill of goods in that the commercials that they thought told them what was happening with the bill weren't necessarily
But there's no way you can get rid of Proposition P because a lot of that money went to raises for police officer salaries.
Correct.
And what politician is going to be say, I want to cut the pay of police? Mm-hmm. I mean, regardless of what you think about police, I wouldn't want somebody cutting my salary. Right. So we're stuck with this forever, basically.
Correct.
And I think that this is a real learning experience for the county, that this may not have been the way people wanted it to go, but we're stuck with it.
Right. Well, and, you know, it got wide support. It wasn't like it squeaked by. It got wide support, but it got wide support because of what people thought it was, not because of what it was. You know, if you read it, you had questions about it. You were concerned that all the money wasn't going to the police. If you watched the commercials, you felt like all the money was going to the police. That's why it got the resounding support. The community support for the police is strong. I can assure you that. I saw that at our town hall meeting. I would expect that you'll see a push from the citizens in St. Louis County to make sure that more of that money is properly directed, that they're going to tell their county councilman and county councilwoman, hey, I voted for that because that was going to send more money to the police, give police raises, put two police in every patrol car, buy technology to improve crime detection and so forth. I would expect a lot of pressure, and I would hope that the citizens of St. Louis County put some pressure on the county council and the county executive to make sure that money is actually going to where people expected it to go.
Well, thank you so much, Representative O'Donnell, for joining us on the podcast to talk about both the upcoming session and giving your perspective on issues pertaining to St. Louis County. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. You can follow me on Twitter at Sarah K. Kellogg. You can follow Jason on Twitter at
Jay Rosenbaum.
And Representative O'Donnell, where can people find you on the internet where you want to be found?
So I'm still on Twitter, despite how toxic it is, but I can be found there at Michael OD_MO, as in Missouri. And then I'm also on Facebook. You can just Google my Michael O'Donnell, Missouri State Representative. You can find me on Facebook. And then also I'm always happy to have people reach out to my office just via the House webpage, house.mo.gov.
Until next time, so long.